You are listening to A Window on the Past on West Limerick 102 FM.
What to say about the shooting of the mayors of Limerick,
yes,
and Joseph O'Donoghue? It happened on the night of Sunday, the 6th of March, and Monday, the 7th of March, 1921.
Right, so we're talking relatively closely to the anniversary of these incidents.
Yes, we're talking just over 102 years later.
Yeah.
Now, the first incident that happened that night was... Joseph O'Donoghue was managing the River Plate Meat Company in William Street in Limerick. Now, the River Plate Meat Company would be importing meat from Argentina.
Right.
Joseph O'Donoghue is from Ballinacargy in County Westmeath. And there is, like some parts of Ireland have, as I've mentioned this before, have a tradition of emigration to... you know, to specific places.
Yes.
For instance, parish of Castleconnell had a tradition of emigration to Sydney. It was facilitated by Richard Burke of Thornfields.
Right.
He was the governor in Sydney, and he made it very easy for people from the Castleconnell area to...
get visas and papers and things.
Yes, yes. And get there. You know. Now, he... years later, there was claims on property in the Castleconnell area, right, by people living in the Sydney area. Surprise, surprise, the parish, what's it called, in Castleconnell got burned.
Oh, God, that's an awful shame.
That was an awful coincidence, though.
Yeah, and an awful shame.
Anyhow, in Westmeath, there was a tradition... of immigration to the Argentine.
Right.
And surprise, surprise, Joseph O'Donoghue gets a job managing the River Plate Meat Company in Limerick. Now, the suspicion, he was in the IRA. Now, I don't know how active he was in the Limerick area. I think he was in the IRA both in Limerick and in Westmeath. And that either way, he's... post was being scrutinised by British intelligence.
Right.
They had come to the conclusion that he was importing more than meat. He was importing arms for the IRA coming in from the Argentine in...
It would be convenient for him to do so, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Anyhow, he was a bachelor, a young man in his 20s, and he was living with a family in Diggs, with a family called Liddy's. Now, in later years, you might have come across Rory Liddy, J.P. Liddy, who was once a mayor of Limerick. And it would be his family house.
Right.
And I don't know who was living there as a kind of a lodger. And at 11 o'clock on the night of the 6th of March, 1921, surprise, surprise, Liddy's house is
raided
by the RIC / Black and Tans, whatever, call them whatever you want. No, they're not actually, they're not Black and Tans really. They are an intelligence death squad.
Right, so they're a specific group.
Yes, headed by a George Montague Nathan. Now, Nathan had been an auxiliary. He was supposed to be of Jewish extraction, but I think he had foregone whatever faith he might have had, Jewish faith he might have had. He was, if he had any faith, he was Church of England at that stage.
Right.
And he had raided Liddy's house, or not Liddy, he had raided... O'Callaghan's and Clancy's on previous occasions. Now, there's no evidence that he raided Liddy's, but on this night, anyhow, at 11 o'clock, Liddy's is raided. and Joseph O'Donoghue is taken out outside, and a number of the raiding party go up to his room and search his room. There's no evidence that they found anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dealing with those people, it doesn't matter. If they've already decided you're guilty.
And they're not going to check twice.
Yeah, evidence is incidental.
They have they have a suspicion, they have a desire to dispatch him, so they do it.
Yes. So what they did anyhow, so it was, O'Donoghue was taken aside, they raided, they searched the house, and then they told Mrs. Liddy that she wasn't to come outside her house until 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Now, 6 o'clock was the end of curfew.
Yes.
You know, in other words...
See, again, when we talk about these times, we talk about them in a very circumspect way, but we have to remember that the people who were trying to have ordinary lives during this time were effectively living under martial law.
It's not effectively. It was... They had declared martial law. Now, martial law had been declared originally in four counties in Munster, in Limerick, Kerry, Cork and Tipperary.
The four that you'd suspect.
Well, the thing about it was that the 6th Military Division, right, embraced 8 counties.
Yes.
It included Clare, Waterford, Wexford and Kilkenny as well. So they found it kind of they really needed to extend all the 6th Southern Division, not just the four counties. So
sure.
In January 1921, martial law was it was declared in those counties as well. Now, the thing about martial law is that a man caught under arms or with a gun on him could be executed. He doesn't have to have done anything. If he was caught with a gun and certain other things, he could be executed.
Yes.
Anyhow, coming back to the United question, O'Donoghue was taken outside and Mrs. Liddy is in fear of her life. Now, I don't think her husband was there. I don't know whether he was dead or alive or what at the time. I don't think there was any husband in the house, but Mrs. Liddy, anyhow, as I say, was told not to go out of her house until after 6 o'clock. Now, O'Donoghue is taken just down the road and he's shot dead. You know, now, as I say, it'd be very difficult for Mrs. Liddy with young children to go out and
see if he's all right or see if he's been cleanly shot.
Now, as I say, that was, let's say, somewhere between 11, half 11 at night, right? Now, about 1 o'clock, half 12 to 1 o'clock, the house of O'Callaghan, Michael O'Callaghan, is raided in the North Strand. And about the same time, the house of Saoirse Clancy is raided. Now, both those houses, Michael O'Callaghan was living in what is now known as O'Callaghan Strand. Now, O'Callaghan Strand is if you go over Sarsfield Bridge, it's the road down to the left at the end of Sarsfield Bridge. Clancy Strand then is the road down to the right. Now, both men lived about a mile apart from each other.
Right.
Because if you take it from the very end where Michael O'Callaghan lived, right up to where Clancy lived, which is quite close to Sarsfield or to Thomond Bridge. Anyhow, the first raid was on O'Callaghan's, and they had been raided a number of times. And the Callaghan was called to the door, and Mrs. O'Callaghan went down ahead of her husband, right, with a candle, right, and there was two men with their collars pulled up. Now, definitely one of those men was George Montague Nathan. Nathan had raided O'Callaghan's a number of times. He also had raided Clancy's. Now, feeling would be that they were desensitizing them.
Yes.
If you raid them up enough and nothing happens, they take it as a kind of a norm.
And people would get complacent, or they would imagine that they would.
No, you see, originally O'Callaghan and Clancy had stayed away from home. They used to live inside in a hotel in Limerick, and it was washed over by the IRA.
Yes.
But they found that their wives were bearing the brunt, you know, of the
constant
raids.
Raids,
you know. And so they decided to forego the security, and they moved back home. Now, as I say, they had been raided so many times, they were desensitized. Anyhow, on this night, O'Callaghan, was called down, and they went down to the door, opened the door. Again, as I say, as they thought, a search raid. And when they got to the door, there was two men there with goggles. One of them was George Montgomery, and Michael O'Callaghan was shot. Shot and critically wounded.
Shot just on the doorstep, just at the door.
His wife had realised what was up, and she had made a grab for the. She got the mask of one of the raiders. I don't think it was Nathan. I think it was the mask of the other man, the assistant. I think the man that was with Nathan, we think he's from Northern Ireland. He was an auxiliary from Northern Ireland, right?
Yes. Now,
at the same time, around the same time, there's a raid on Clancy's. Now, the men that raided Clancy's, this is where it gets very suspicious. They had to walk past the Strand Barracks. There's a regiment of soldiers in the Strand Barracks, and their sentries posted. And they walked past the Strand Barracks, they weren't challenged.
Oh.
Now, you see, there's curfew on, right?
Yeah.
So anyone out at night...
Should
have been challenged, right? But they weren't. Now, they went to Clancy's house, which is about 200 yards away, right? And the same procedure that happened at O'Callaghan's happened at Clancy's. And George Clancy is shot and killed, right? And the three, in this case, there was three agents or three officers or whatever you want to call them, right? Three killers, right?
Yes.
And they shot O'Callaghan, they shot Clancy, and they ran back past the barracks.
And again, they weren't challenged?
They weren't challenged, right? Now, as I say, in the meantime, Mrs. O'Callaghan had rung the barracks. She had rung William Street Barracks. And eventually, after a lot of to and froing, she got on the line to the man that was in charge that night, an inspector called Leslie Ibbotson. Now, Ibbotson was an Englishman, and Ibbotson, she asked him for assistance that her husband had been shot.
Yes.
And he promised to send out a patrol, whatever the hell was said. And she also rang Dr. Roberts. Now, Dr. Roberts lived in Mallow Street.
Right.
And he walked down from Mallow Street, took his life in his hands,
mm-hmm.
walked down from Mallow Street with his doctor's bag very clearly shown, right, down O'Connell Street. And as he's walking down Sarsfield Street, he meets five men coming up on the other side of the street. Fortunately for him, he was on the left-hand side and they were coming up on the right-hand side.
Yes.
So they didn't interfere with him. But he passed on.
He passed and on opposite sides of the street.
Passed up, right?
Yeah.
And he went to O'Callaghan's and he gave whatever medical help he could. But as I say, both O'Callaghan and Clancy were past medical help. I mean, these guys, this death squad, they knew what they were doing.
They were shot at point blank range. They weren't
shot at point blank range. No, they weren't killed outright, but they had no hope of
surviving. You know, yeah.
A survivor. And when Dr. Roberts had done what he could for Mrs. O'Callaghan, right, he came back up, right, and he called into the Franciscans. There was a father, I can't think of his name, Father Ferdinand, right, that was amenable to Republicans, and he was the head man, I think, in the Franciscans. And Dr. Roberts called into the Franciscans to alert him to send a priest to O'Callaghan's. Now, in the meantime, the RIC patrol sent out by Ibbotson arrives at O'Callaghan's, or arrives at the Franciscans, because they were also going to pick up the priest and bring him to O'Callaghan's. Now, when Ibbotson gets to O'Callaghan's, right?
Yes.
Without any, well, he saw what happened and whatever the hell was there. But then he decided to visit Clancy's.
Oh.
Now, what reason had he for going to Clancy's?
Right? Maybe it was just a random visit.
A random visit, exactly. Right? Now, as I say, the whole thing was an orchestrated murder, right?
Of course. Too and many coincidences piling up together.
Yes. I mean, the fact that there was... When Mrs. O'Callaghan rang the RIC in William Street, she rang them at 1:15.
Yes.
It was 2:40. When Ibbotson sent out his patrol, why did it take 25 minutes?
They weren't in any particular hurry. I surmise.
Well, they weren't in any particular hurry, but they knew what was going down, and there was a danger that if you sent out a patrol at the wrong time, they could run into the death squad.
Yeah, they wanted to give them plenty of time to be gone, and
yes,
dare I say, give plenty of time for O'Callaghan to be beyond medical aid, if that should arise.
Well, I think just more to make sure they didn't attach. Like the thing about it was there was a detachment of auxiliaries based in Cruz's Hotel.
Yes.
Now, in addition, our friend Ibbotson, who had been in the auxiliaries originally, was also based in when he was off duty, he was based in Cruz's Hotel.
Another coincidence.
Another coincidence, right? So, as I said, the upshot, anyhow, was that by the time the police went to Mr. O'Callaghan's, the death squad had done their business and they had gone, and they were celebrating inside in Cruz's Hotel. Now, a man interviewed in later years said that Nathan and another auxiliary. Now, this auxiliary, we think, when I assume he was from Northern Ireland, right?
Yes.
They turned up at the lakeside. You see, there was a detachment of auxiliaries based in the lakeside, right?
Yes.
Now, we believe that the units inside in Cruz's Hotel were actually, you know, dare I say, detached from the unit in Killaloe. They were all part of the same unit.
Right.
And but either way, anyhow, that when Nathan and this other man, I can't think of his name, he's from Northern Ireland, turned up at Killaloe, as it was described in a book written by George Bennett on the Black and Tans, that they were well boozed. Now, you have to ask, where were they boozing, you know, during curfew?
During curfew, yeah.
No doubt they were boozing in Cruz's
Hotel. Yeah.
You know, that you can't prove it absolutely, but where else for that?
It all adds up.
Yeah, it all adds up. Now, as I say, the almost insulting thing, I would say, the British intelligence, or the British, I won't say intelligence, but British press spokesman, right?
Yes.
Made the charge that the IRA, had bumped off both Clancy and O'Callaghan because they weren't advocating violence, that they were too much in favour of peace. How ironic.
How ironic is that?
Oh, ironic. And as I said, that was their excuse for saying that it was a more violent element of the IRA that had shot the two mayors, not the...
not the RIC themselves or their appointed death squad.
No, the white as angels.
Yes.
So as I say, that's...
But it doesn't add up. It doesn't add up. Right? Their story doesn't add up.
What does add up is, why did it take Ibbotson 25 minutes to round up a few policemen to go a quarter mile down the road?
Also, why did he go to Clancy's house when he hadn't been called there?
Yes. Now, as I say, the inquiry would have to be said was a whitewash. Yes. There were no awkward questions asked. I mean, the obvious question was to Ibbotson, why did it take you 25 minutes to from the time you got the call
to go to O'Callaghan's house? And in conjunction with that, why did you go to Clancy's house when you hadn't been called there?
Yes.
What business did you have to go in there?
No, the next question that we asked us of the sentry and his officer, the officer at the Strand Barracks, why didn't you challenge men going past in during curfew.
During curfew, yeah.
And when shots were fired, and you helped fellas running back past your
Why didn't you challenge them then?
Yeah. So, as I say, the inquiry into the shooting of the two mayors in Limerick certainly left more unanswered questions than answered ones.
But it points fingers in one single direction.
Oh, it pointed absolutely at the inspector in William Street, Ibbotson, the officer in charge of the guard at the Strand Barracks. But of course, those questions were never answered. Now, it didn't help. It probably didn't help in a way that neither Mrs. Clancy or Mrs. O'Callaghan went to the inquiry. You know, because if they had gone to the inquiry or been represented with a solicitor, they could have asked awkward questions.
Yes.
Or poked awkward questions, you know.
Why do you suppose they didn't? Were they just kind of in fear still, or...?
No, they had no trust at all. They had totally, you see, O'Callaghan and Clancy. Now, O'Callaghan wasn't involved in the IRA, but he was involved in Sinn Féin.
Sure.
Clancy was involved in both Sinn Féin and the IRA.
Right.
So they would have had, you know, they would have seen the RIC and that as the enemy.
As the enemy, and they wouldn't be going to them for any sort of help or assistance or clarification. Yeah.
Now, the only thing they might go to is to embarrass them, but I think they decided not to.
Mm.
Because I don't know how, you know, if there was a public... I don't think those inquiries were not held in public. Now, they are on the record, and you can access them today. But, you know, at the same time, I don't think at that time that people were encouraged to go to those inquiries.
You have been listening to A Window on the Past on West Limerick 102 FM.